right, gender equity. It is a big topic of conversation these days. This is part of a spotlight segment on Long Island. That's where we revisit with labor and employment attorney extraordinaire Jonathan Bell, an expert and the owner of the Bell Law Group, who represents individuals in employment that are not being paid in accordance with the law. And we welcome John back to the airwaves here at LA News Radio. Mr. Bell, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Jay. How you doing? Happy 4th year. I hope you had a great holiday weekend.
Did. It was a wonderful weekend indeed. And how about the fine ladies of FIFA and the U.S. of A.? They'll have a little bit of a parade tomorrow, Canyon of Heroes, and really kind of brought out, you know, reading the statistics and everything else, John, of the uneven workplace, especially in the world of soccer. I mean, it was quite alarming. It really was.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, congratulations to them. They're ranked number one. They won their fourth World Cup on Sunday, and they were much more successful than the men's national team. That's for sure. And like you said, there's a huge pay disparity there, and a lawsuit has ensued based on that Equal Pay Act of 1963, which essentially abolishes wage disparity based on sex. It was signed into the law by John F. Kennedy, which basically says you can't pay differently based on sex for equal work, equal skill, effort, and responsibility under similarly working conditions. So I think the lawsuit has some legs, Jay.
It does, but you know something, and again, I'm not taking anything away from the achievement, but let's break it down as far as what's going on here. You have these fine set of ladies who did a wonderful job, not taking anything away from what their performance equated to, which was a championship, second in a row here. But, you know, when you break it down, I mean, couldn't you make the case that the women's game not as popular or profitable? That fundamentally drives pay as far as the sport is concerned, no?
That's a very good point, Jay, and that's really what they have to look at. I mean, interestingly, that's the fact in a lot of different sports, but it might not be that way in soccer. The United States Soccer Federation has a total operating revenue of $100 million, and 50% of that is due to sponsorship. Now, in 2014 and 15, the sponsorship base grew nearly 50% because the men's national team last played in the World Cup. However, since then, in 2015 and 16, there was another 25% growth in sponsorship when the women won the World Cup, and it's been the same ever since. Now, the interesting way in the way the sponsorship or package is done in a bundle, so you can't really attribute, is it the men's or the women's that are drawing these sponsors? But just based on success, you would think it would be the women. The real difficult formula is the fact that FIFA, right, which is the International Football Association, they determine the amount of the award for the World Cup. And there's a huge disparity there. And that's what the United States Soccer Federation is kind of hanging their hat on. The budget is like $400 million for men, where the champions win $38 million, versus $30 million for the women, where the champions win about $4 million. And they're saying, hey, listen, FIFA is giving this money and we have to distribute it. And they're the ones that are causing this huge pay discrepancy, but we're just distributing the money. And the lawyers are arguing, hey, you know, you're a United States employer. That doesn't matter to us. Just because FIFA discriminates against women, you still have a duty under the law to pay equally. So this is really a very, very interesting scenario here, and might be a case of first impression, and surely I'll be following it.
Oh, there's no doubt, John Bell with us. You know, I'll tell you, when you look at the tournament, and you look at the viewership. I look at viewership. That's important. The women's tournament had about $1 billion or so across all platforms. That is nothing to throw away. But you look at the World Cup of the men's last, 2018. They had $1 billion for just the final game. So, you know, you see the disparity there as far as, you know, with what's happening here. Listen, the men are nobodies who failed to qualify for the 18 World Cup. But yet you go back, and when reading and doing a little research on this, John, as I did from 2016 through 18, according to the Wall Street Journal, the women just barely out-earned the men. 50, it was, you know, I mean, it was still there. $50 to $49 million.
Sure. Uh-huh.
So, you wonder about the smaller audience for the women's team in the equal pay lawsuit. You know, I mean, how do you kind of, you know, spell it out in the courts as far as, you know, everything else? We give you the numbers and everything, but how do you kind of combat it?
Right. I think, Jay, what it's going to come down to is they're going to have to measure profitability and make sure they're using at least the same formula for the men versus the women. So yes, you're 100% correct that the viewership worldwide might be more for the male, but you got to look at how much the United States Soccer Federation itself is profiting. I think a chief executive at Nike said that the women's uniforms or jerseys, it was sold in record-breaking numbers, more than any men's season ever in the history of them selling these types of jerseys. So really, you got to take everything as a whole, not just one portion of it. Factor out how much revenue that these women are earning versus the men, and then just pay them equally. Obviously, if the women are going further and playing more games, that's one fact. And then the other fact is the sponsorship and the money they're raising through their great efforts and great success. And also, Jay, one more thing. What complicates it a little bit further is the fact that there's a CBA, a collective bargaining agreement. And you know, when you negotiate collective bargaining agreements, one might vary differently from the other. For example, I read something that in the collective bargaining agreement for men, if they don't play, they don't get paid, but the women are guaranteed a certain salary at the lower end. However, if the men do end up playing, they make a lot more than the women do. So it's really all this has to be analyzed. Otherwise, it's going to be a complicated case. There's no easy solution here.
John, it comes down to marketing, in my opinion. When I see that, you know, FIFA raking in more than $6 billion from the 2018 Men's World Cup and the Women's World Cup this year, when all said and done, you know, you're going to make about $130 million. I mean, that's rather large. And, you know, sure, as far as disparities concerned, they have to do a better job. You know, we never hear the names of Alex Morgan and Megan Rapinoe.
You're right.
You know, Carly Lloyd. We never hear those names outside of the competition.
You're
Why
right.
can't
You're
they
right.
do a better job to market these stars 12 months a year rather than every 4 years? To me, that's first and foremost, John Bell.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you, I was at the beach club on Sunday, and everybody was by the bar area with their eyes glued to the set. It was actually very exciting.
I really was. It was a lot of – I was watching all over the place, you know. I mean, you know, listen, what happened against England, they could have lost that one. They came back. Spain, they were on the brink, and in fine fashion, they took
True.
Care of business. No question.
True.
Let's get into some other areas. John Bell with us, leading labor attorney. You know, let's talk about the regular workplace. You know, I look at Me Too. I look at Time's Up. You know, listen, they've done what 50 years of sexual harassment laws couldn't, in my opinion. How do we change it? How do we have that more than a moment? How do we keep it real? How do we keep it lasting as far as change afoot for all women in the workplace, John Bell, in your opinion?
Well, like people by you, people bring it up and mentioning it and talking about it and really just bringing it to the forefront and realizing that these things won't be tolerated anymore in the workplace. You know, unfortunately, I found, because, you know, I talk to a lot of people in the area, and some people have the opposite approach, like people are taking advantage now, and it's almost backfiring, and the people should be able to tolerate some things, and now managers are afraid to be with a young woman behind a closed door and things of that nature. And it's really unfortunate. But at the end of the day, the message is still very important, and really, statistically, when women are interviewed in the workplace, they've almost all suffered some harassment, whether it be either a physical touching or a gesture or a inappropriate comment in the workplace. So you got to tread very carefully. I mean, there really should be a zero tolerance, but on the same token, you know, I met my wife in the workplace, and a lot of people do, because you spend more time in the workplace than you do at home to a certain extent. So there has to be a fine line. You have to tread carefully, and employers and managers have to make sure that that not only they themselves get trained, but also their subordinates get trained on what's appropriate and not appropriate in the workplace.
I mean, are you going to tell me the Bell love story started actually at the water cooler, or are you telling
it
me that?
Started at a law firm. Yes, started at a law firm. dorm when I was in law school and met my wife there. And that's how a lot of it's a very sensitive topic. And you know, whether you're a male or female and interested in another male or another female, whatever it might be, you gotta tread cautiously and make sure that if you do have some interest before you act on it, you better be pretty certain that it's mutual.
No question. John Bell with us. What about corporate boards? You know, I was reading an interesting number, John, the other day. I think it was 22% of seats on boards of Fortune 500 companies are held by women. Just 22%. No doubt. You know, when you look at it, boards benefit from a range of viewpoints represented by different backgrounds, experiences, ages, the whole thing. But it has shown that there are added benefits from gender diversity here. So what about that aspect of it? You know, just being on boards in general, it's a low number, 22%.
Right. That's a frightening statistic. And I imagine it was probably lower a few years ago. I imagine it'll still creep up as people realize and continue to realize the value of females in the workplace and especially in management or roles. I can tell you that in my law firm, we have 7 attorneys and 5 of the attorneys are female. And, you know, we didn't hire them because they're females, but on the same token, they did a terrific job during their interview. They're very dedicated to the firm. They work very, very hard. And in the past, we've replaced some of the men attorneys with females. And again, just individually, we've noticed that the ones that we've hired have happened to be working very, very hard. So it's important to not make a decision based on somebody's protected class, such as gender or race or age, religion. You have to keep an open mind and make sure that you just look at the person's qualifications and you give people a chance.
Hey, 22% is a low number. You got to get that number up, no question. Listen, you could reach a higher number. And listen, it might require bylaws changes, maybe board term limits, or really just, you know, kind of a more conscious effort to replace some of these retiring individuals with ones who meet the profile, what a board should be in today's world when you think about it, no, John?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I mean, you know, pregnancy discrimination is a hot topic out there. And, you know, there's the fear that you're going to have a woman working for you. And then all of a sudden she tells you she's pregnant. Now it's hands off. And then you're worried about what's going to happen. And so there are very negative, erroneous feelings about this. But they're 100% protected under the law. And they're very dedicated employees. And, you know, as a result, the EEOC is bombarded with these pregnancy discrimination cases. And because of that, you know, I think that people give females sometimes less opportunities for advancement.
No question. What about overall, I'll throw this one at you here. In summation, what about, you know, this flexibility, temporal flexibility over salary? You know, I was reading where I guess you had some guy from Harvard, a professor, who finds one of the reasons women earn less money than men do is they strongly prefer, you know, that flexibility situation over salary. You know, that is that they're willing to turn down higher paying jobs because those jobs come with more demanding hours or less predictable ones. What about in that particular instance?
That could very well be the case, but still, 22% is like you said, certainly raises your eyebrow. I don't think the disparity would be that much. There are certain women who enjoy flexibility, whether it be working from home or in some type of limited capacity. I know plenty of men who are stay-at-home dads now, and they appreciate the same thing because their wives are out earning what they were earning in the workplace, so they made a cognizant decision to keep the male home. So I think that does that may play a role in it and affect it, but I still think 22% is too low of a number to justify it.
But I say put everybody's salary as far as, you know, on the break room walls. I mean, you know, how about that? How about that aspect of it? Listen, I know in this country, you know, that you have your traditional cultural restrictions on discussing pay. But what about companies? I mean, what about considering information to be posted? Therefore, you know what? Get everything out in the open, then you could discuss, John.
Right. That would be an interesting proposition. I can tell you that, you know, a lot of companies actually have in their handbook something regarding not being allowed to discuss your pay with your coworkers, which is actually held to be illegal in violation of laws, because they want, because there's no other way to find out if you're being paid equal according to the Equal Pay Act or other type of protected classes, unless it's a discussion or it seems to go against employees potentially trying to form a union. So if that's in your handbook, you should seriously consider taking it out and having your handbook looked at and rewritten to see what other violations are out there.
No question about it. I tell you, an interesting conversation, no question. We'll see what happens as far as the World Soccer Federation and the lawsuit. That's going to be very interesting down the road. Can't thank you enough for a couple of minutes, though, sir.
Thank you, Jay. I really appreciate the time and looking forward to speaking with you again.
Here you go. Jonathan Bell, he leads the way as far as one of the best of labor attorneys. You know, when you break it down, folks, you know, you look at managers, and they're not really rotten people. They're just poorly trained when you think about it. You know, I think you should get every manager trained, hold regular refresher courses so that a company is a great company to work for in every department. And let's face it, great companies attract great people, all genders, male, female, you name it, trans, whatever. Great companies attract great people. Always, always in the equation as being a common denominator.